Morning, church. How's everybody doing? Okay, doing well. kids, if you want to head out, you are welcome to do that. And if you have your Bible, I'm in John chapter 10. We have been going through this I Am series, the I Am statements of Jesus. And he makes several of them in the book of John. And last week, Todd did an incredible job teaching us what it means that Jesus is the light of the world, fleshing out what that meant for Jesus and what it means for us today. And so we're going to step into that in a minute. But first, Little Dragons, if you are part of that, next week is the place to be. I was sitting at a coffee shop this week, and I was sitting there reading, and a lady walked in, and she looks at me, and she goes, "Are you the pastor of that Little Dragons thing?" And I was like, "Yes, I'm one of them." And she got to talking to me, and as she was talking, some other people came in, and all of a sudden, all these questions were swirling about our church and things of that nature. And so it's kind of a neat thing. So thanks for heading that up, Todd. And remember, share that. Text the link out to people. It's super easy for people to jump in and help. She did one of the sponsor an athlete things, and so it was really, really neat to see that. So as we step into this next I Am statement, it's kind of an odd statement, a statement that just kind of sits there and doesn't really feel like it's going anywhere. As I was looking at this statement this week, I thought to myself, Todd next week has I Am the Good Shepherd, which is an incredible I Am statement. Lots of things to talk about, lots of ways to take it. It's probably going to be a wonderful message. And whoever made the preaching schedule decided that the I Am statement best for me to handle is one we find in John 10 this morning, which is I Am the Door. And I thought to myself, how am I going to explain this? And in John chapter 10, he says this twice, says, I am the door twice. And as I was reading this, I was just kind of struck with both kind of the mundane thoughts about doors, just about doors in general. I don't know if I've ever thought about doors so much in my life, but also the intrigue of a door. Doors are really the entrance and exits to some of life's best and worst moments. And doors are all around us. We use them all of the time. Let me just walk you through how often you use a door in my life this morning. So I woke up this morning and walked out of my bedroom door and into the bathroom door and back to my bedroom door and then out again to the basement door, to the bathroom door, to the front door, to the door of my van, to my office door, to a coffee shop door, in and out, then back to my van door, out of my van door, through this door to here, into the library door, back out of the library door, into those doors, back into this door, into the closet multiple times. And I don't know if we realize actually how often you walk through doors. They're everywhere. We walk in and out of them all the time. So much so that we don't realize or even think about it until something happens. Doors are the entrance and the exit to some of life's best and worst moments. So maybe it's the door of a kid knocking at your bedroom door late at night, sick, which is like, wake your spouse up, right? Or scared, or them yelling from the bathroom that somebody needs toilet paper, or the smell coming from the kitchen door as it overwhelms the nostrils. Or that vacation spot door where life just seems to relax. Or the closed bathroom door where mom and dad just need a minute. Or when you walk through the door to a surprise party or an anniversary. Or when you carry your wife over the threshold for the first time, if you did that. Or the doors where the doors open and you see your bride coming down the aisle for the first time. Doors are the entrance and the exits to some of life's best and worst moments. Maybe doors cannot be so good sometimes, like Maybe you've had somebody break in through your front door. Or like me a few weeks ago, a raccoon was climbing up my front door. And your security is left a little shaken, if you will. Or maybe you're working late at night and your van door just falls off for some reason. Or when you get into your car door and you get into a wreck. Or the door to meet a new friend or family member for the first time. Or maybe it's a hospital door where you never thought you'd be. Or maybe it's the door of a new job. Or a house. Or a car. Or a new office. Doors are the entrances and exits to some of life's best and worst moments. And doors have all sorts of implications. And when Jesus is talking about, I am the door, even the disciples were like, you're what? And he said, I'm the door. And they're like, you're what? I don't understand the analogy that you're getting after. What does it mean that Jesus is the door? And so if you're sitting here this morning, you're like, where are you going with this one? You're not alone. And so in John chapter 10, look with me, starting in verse 1, it says this. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens, the sheep hears his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they don't know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. Let's just pause there for a quick moment, because Jesus is explaining a sheepfold. So in this days, you'd have a sheepfold, kind of larger walls, and one entrance into the sheepfold. And often the shepherd would sit at the entrance at night, and he became the door to the sheepfold. So nothing was coming in and nothing was going out. Nothing was coming in, nothing was going out into that sheepfold. He provided the protection that the sheep would have needed. In other words, if you were coming over the wall of the sheepfold, you were probably somebody that was not welcome in the sheepfold. Could have been an animal to attack. It could have been an enemy to steal. You're into some sort of mischief, if you will. But if you're the shepherd, you would have led the sheep in and out of the fold through that door. Seems normal, right? And when you want to leave, you go through the same door. So the shepherd would call the sheep by name, and the sheep would know his voice. Now you read that, and a lot of times I think in the church, we think, you know, a lot of times sheep are preached that they're stupid animals. Sheep actually have some very interesting intellect to them. And actually when Jesus is saying, like, the sheep know the shepherd's voice, and they will follow him, it's actually true. Shepherds often actually gave sheep names, and they would call these sheep by names, and the sheep would come. And so sheep actually have these brains. Yes, some things they do are dumb, but they also have some intellect where they would know the shepherds, because in a sheepfold in this day and age, you may not be the only shepherd with his sheep in the sheepfold. And so how do you get your sheep to come out? They have to know your voice. And that's the way that you knew that sheep weren't getting stolen and those sorts of things. And so the shepherd leads them through the front door. Did you notice that? You always think of like a shepherd and you think that they're always leading the sheep from where? Behind. But not here. He's leading them out. And so the sheep are following them. And so they wouldn't follow a stranger, because they would not know the stranger's voice, only the voice of the shepherd. So you have a sheepfold, one door in and out. If you're going over the sheepfold, you're probably into some mischief, you're probably trying to harm, and the shepherd is at the door protecting the sheep. Keep going with me, because the disciples are like, I don't know what you're talking about, right? Verse 7. So Jesus again says to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. There's the first one. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. So there's a switch that's happening here, if you've noticed, from like tangible, like actual sheepfold, sheep, shepherd, to now some spiritual things. There's a shift that Jesus is trying to get his disciples to realize. So he says, I am the door of the sheep. Basically, those before me came to steal the sheep from the shepherd, but they didn't go with him because they didn't know his voice. And then again, he says, I am the door. And if people come through the door, they will be saved. So you have the door of salvation, if you will, and I'm not going to dive totally into that. And you'll go out and you'll go in to find pasture. And then he makes this statement that the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. In other words, there are things trying to steal the sheep. And then he ends with that line we've heard a lot of times in the church. I came, Jesus came, that the sheep may have life and have it abundantly. Now, let me just clarify two things. Who are the sheep? We are. Good. This is like a softball lob. Let's hit that sucker out of the park, right? And here's an even easier one. Who's the shepherd? Jesus. This is like if you grew up in Sunday school, like it doesn't matter what the question was, you're like Jesus, right? Who's the shepherd? Who's the shepherd? Jesus. And who are the sheep? Okay. So there's a switch from actual sheep, actual shepherd, to spiritual sheep, people, and Jesus, okay? And so there are things that are kind of going on here. So on one hand, there are people trying to do three things. What are they? Kill, steal, and destroy. Now, we know why people steal things typically. It's for a few reasons. There's value in whatever they're after. Maybe they need money. And I'm sure we could think of plenty of other reasons why people steal things. But to kill, why do people kill? Well, maybe because of anger, jealousy, rage. Maybe to have something that's not theirs, whether it's something small or something has escalated like war. Killing something is next level stealing. And then why do people destroy? Why do we destroy things? You ever work on something and it's not going right? And the object that you're working on somehow is thrown against a wall? Well, why do you destroy things? Well, a lot of times because of frustration, irritation, you can't figure it out, right? Or you self-sabotage things. But these three words don't have to be taken literally. We steal, kill, and destroy things all the time in our life. Take things that are not ours. We kill things in our life that were maybe once abundant, or maybe kill a bad habit, if you will. So it doesn't always have to be negative. We destroy things all the time. We self-sabotage. We destroy relationships for dumb reasons rather than working them out. And so what Jesus is asking the disciples is this question. Do you know my voice? Do you know my voice? And he's asking you that question. He's asking me that question. Do you know my voice? Or are you following the voice of the things that steal, kill, and destroy? Do you know my voice? Or are you following the voice that kill and destroy and steal from your life? Jesus, the I am the door, contrasts all that. He says, I am the opposite of things that steal, kill, and destroy. I came to you so that you may have life. What is the word there in verse 10? Abundantly. That sounds good, doesn't it? To have life abundantly. It's like the question for us here, I think, is what is abundant? What does an abundant life look like? I think as I talk with a lot of people, and maybe you feel this way, but the abundant life seems a bit far off at times. Sometimes it almost feels impossible. Like, where is that? Like, I would like to have that. I would like to find that. The life where it feels like You want the abundant life. You want to listen to Jesus's voice. But more often than not, we feel like maybe our lives are being robbed, destroyed, and killed. Seems a little bit more realistic. And it almost seems like there's two different lives here. One life that seems like the worst moments, the door that has the worst moments in life, and one that seems like it has the best moments in life. And I guess the question for us is this, is if Jesus is the door, then what life do you believe he's offering you? Because I think even if you know Jesus, if you're a follower of Christ, a lot of times you think that Jesus is just like after you. He's out to get you. He's out to destroy you. And he's just going to put trials and temptations and all this stuff in your life where you're like, right? And it's like not even an enjoyable life. Like, why am I even following the Lord? Ever watch those game shows where they're like, behind door number one, tell them what they've won, right? And it's kind of the same thing here. Behind door number one is a life of killing and stealing, and right? And behind door number two is life abundant. Which door are you going to choose? Some of you may be in a place where you actually may choose the life of stealing, killing, not door. Some of you may go, I'm tired of that door. I would like life abundant. And so some of this actually has to relate back to where are you at in your life? Now, what's interesting here is that the sheep that are being stolen, destroyed, and killed are the sheep that don't follow the shepherd in and out of the fold. I think sometimes we think that the safest place for us to be is in the fold, or the church, if you will. But in verse 9, do you notice what it says? The sheep will go in and out to find pasture. In and out. In other words, the shepherd will lead them both into the fold and out of the fold to find pasture. Now, in this time period, the shepherd, like I said, would have laid down at the entrance for the sheepfold. He would have become the door. In essence, he is the door. And so there's this back and forth of the door. It's an entrance and it's an exit. Someone once said that the safest place for ships is in the harbor, but that's not why they were built. And I think a lot of times for Christians, we go, well, the safest place for us is to be in the church, but that's not why you were saved. There's an entrance and there's an exit, and you go in and you go out. It's actually a rhythm of life. There's an entrance and there's an exit. There's good moments, there's hard moments. There's in and there's out. And so we were meant to enter the fold and exit the fold and find abundance or pasture, if you will, actually, in both situations. Notice that it doesn't say he leads them into the fold to find pasture and he leads them out of the fold to find something else. He leads them in and out, both to find pasture, both to find abundance. And so if I were to ask you, if you're sitting here this morning, I don't know where all of you are at in your faith journey, in your life, but if you were to define like what a spiritual life is, what would be on that list of descriptions for you? Would the word abundance even appear on it? Or would it just be a list of like, go to church, read your Bible, pray? And don't get me wrong, those things are absolutely necessary in your spiritual walk. They're crucial for a person to grow. But abundance, it almost feels like it's a dirty word in the church. Almost feels like it's a dirty word. I was working this week, and I was thinking back through my life, and I grew up in ministry. My dad was in ministry. We grew up like with nothing. Like there were times we'd sit at our dinner table, and my dad would be like, "Well, I don't have any food, and I don't have any money." So we're just going to pray. And so I had this mentality in my life that if you're in ministry, you should be what? Poor. You should be broke. Yet we have a God of abundance. It's like almost feels like it doesn't line up. And that's just not just ministry, that's anything in your life. Whether you're an engineer, a mechanic, a mom, a dad, a nurse, whatever you are, does the Lord want you to have abundance? Now the question becomes, what is abundance? Like, do we just get whatever we want? Is that what we're talking about here? Abundance seems like it's a dirty word in the church. Yet we like cling to and preach to words like kill and destroy. And like we preach about that stuff more often than we do about the opposite of that. But Jesus says, I am the door, and I am asking the door to what? Show me the abundance. Lead me in and out of abundance. I think in America, the problem with the word abundance is that we think about material possessions, where I don't think that's what he's talking about here. I think he's talking about something much deeper than just a garage full of possessions. He's talking about an abundant spiritual life. And so if you were to define your spiritual life, what's on that list? I think Jesus is talking about something that goes beyond the normal or what we can expect. Let me ask you this question. What do you actually expect out of your walk with God? Like, what do you expect out of it? Or is it just like, I just do the motions? Or do you actually have things that you're expecting from the Lord, to receive from the Lord out of His abundance? You ever put expectations on God? Like, ooh, yeah, and then like it doesn't happen. And then you read a passage like this, and you're like, I thought you were like an abundant God. Why aren't you helping me? What's going on? And we kind of are like, what's happening? Maybe the expectations are not expectations that were ever meant to be put on God. Maybe the expectation is your faith really hasn't grown from when you were like five years old sitting in like a musty Sunday school room in the basement of a church. You're still clinging to the things that were taught there. Some were really great and some were probably not so great. And you're like, and you're stuck. You're like my age, 43, yet you're still like a five-year-old Christian. Because we haven't tapped into the abundance that is Jesus Christ. True abundance is found in the spiritual things of our life, not earthly possessions. But what does that mean? Let's be honest. You know, I think we spend more time, energy, and money on earthly abundance than we do on spiritual abundance. But let's ask why. Well, let's notice a few things here. There's this rhythm to this life of abundance. Look at verse 9. He will enter by Jesus, right? They'll be saved. They'll be saved, which means you are moving maybe from the one that is trying to steal and kill to the one that is now saved by Jesus to live a life of abundance in pasture with the shepherd. And so you're going to go in, and you're going to go out and you're going to find pasture. When sheep finds pasture, it means that they are at peace. They feel protected and they have an abundance to eat. Now, notice they find it both in the fold and outside the fold. The word here for pasture is a word and a concept used for spiritual nourishment and the provision of God. It helps us understand the idea that when in the shepherd's, Jesus's care, you are fed, you are cared for, you are sustained, and you're growing. When you're in pasture with Jesus, it means that you are fed spiritually, You are cared for spiritually. You are sustained spiritually. And you are growing spiritually. It's the idea of Psalm 23 that he leads us, what? To green pastures and beside what? Still waters. If a sheep goes to still water to drink, he feels that he is safe to drink. It's the only reason they're going to drink. Or in Philippians 4:19, where it says he will supply what? How many of your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus? Some of them or all of them? All of them. Well, how can he provide all of our needs? And I think a lot of times when we read that passage, we're like, well, I have a need for a new car and a new this and a new that. And it's like, whoa. Maybe he's actually not talking about that. Maybe he will provide that for you, but maybe at first he's talking about different needs. And how can God provide for all of our needs in his glorious riches in Christ Jesus? Because he's a God of abundance. He's a God of abundance, which means he is never going to run out of what you need. For the world. For the entire world. That's how abundant God is. So what is he saying is that God has the abundance to provide for whoever and for whatever your need is out of his abundance. Now the question I've been asking myself this week is, if I have a God that fills me with his abundance, why do I often feel depleted? If I have a God that fills me with his abundance, why do I often feel depleted? If I have a Savior that says, I am the door, in other words, come through him and he will provide, then why do I often feel empty? Maybe because I go to the wrong door and knock to be filled. If doors are the entrances and exits to some of life's best and worst moments, or maybe now we could say doors are the entrance and exits to a life of abundance or depletion, or maybe we haven't figured out how to enter into the abundance and we keep running for the exit. We actually keep running away from God rather than to him. In a sheepfold, the shepherd sits at the entrance, the only way in, the only way out. Nothing went out without him and nothing came in without his permission. And so he provided a safety for his sheep to rest abundantly, to eat abundantly, to drink abundantly, to know their safety was vast and abundant, to feel their needs abundantly filled, and for their spirit to abundantly be calm. For me, that sounds pretty nice to be in the sheepfold, doesn't it? Resting in the abundance of all the things that we need in our life. I think in my life, and maybe yours, I do a lot of preservation of what I have versus resting in the abundance of Jesus. And so the door to my emotions is not a Jesus who gives me peace and quiet, but it's a preservation of my emotions. I was talking to somebody this week and they were talking to me about their anxiety. And I said, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not. But I just said to them, I said, it seems to me that you're actually trying to preserve and hold on to your anxiety than you are to rest in the abundance of peace that Jesus has. Jesus has more peace for your anxiety than you could ever imagine. Yet we cling and rest in holding on, preserving the things that drive you absolutely crazy for some reason. For some of us, maybe it's the door that we knock on for our mental health. We don't have peace there when you could have the abundance of it, that you don't have to worry, you don't have to be anxious. Or maybe you've been walking through the door of preservation with your physical body, not really doing anything to live out the abundance of Jesus. So you let your body just kind of decay at a rapid pace and walk through the abundance that Jesus has to maybe, and the gifts that he's given other people to help you with your physical health. So you have pain in your body and you're just like, oh, I just got to deal with it. Fix it. Go after it. Find the doctors. Find the people. Exercise, eat right. Do what you need to do, because Jesus has given us an abundance so that our bodies can be a tool for the gospel, for the good news of Jesus. Or maybe you walk through the door of preservation with relationships. So you manipulate and you guilt and whatever, rather than realize there's a way to have abundant relationships and not have to like force people to have relationship with you, but to actually live in like a joyful relationship with people and enjoy it. And when things go wrong, there's an abundance of forgiveness and mercy and grace to forgive so that the relationship can be beautiful. Or maybe you don't expand your relationships with people. You just preserve the ones that you have. And you've had like the same four friends for your entire life, which is great, except for not the gospel. And so you cling to the people because you're trying to preserve what you've built and what you have. Versus, maybe there's somebody else that needs a relationship like this in my world. And maybe I need a different relationship like this in my world to give somebody a different perspective into my life. So we preserve relationships. Doors are interesting things. We use them a lot in our spiritual life, especially in the church, right? Well, God, what? Closed the door, or God opened the door. Listen, I hate when people say that. Just to be really honest with you. Well, why do we say that? Well, now we know, because he's what? The door. Right? He's the door. And so we use it a lot in the church. And so doors are this interesting thing. And we use these analogies when it comes to circumstances in life. But I think sometimes God is actually trying to open the doors of your life that we've got locked up, deadbolted, and a chair wedged under the doorknob to keep everything out. Church, what if the reason that the shepherd, Jesus, is the door is because he wants the doors to your life to remain open to him and whatever he has for you? Like, he is the door, not you. He's the door to life, not you. So what if God is trying to get you to realize that he is the door? One of our values here at our church is health and healing. I think many of us have doors in this area that we've got locked up. But what if we allowed the great I am, the door, to no longer be us protecting and preserving the areas in our life that are hurt and broken and dismantled and scarred and anxious and addicted and stressed and whatever else you want to fill in the blank there? But what if you allow those spaces to allow Jesus to be the door and usher in his abundance in those areas in your life? We spend so much time trying to preserve and protect from all the things that might hurt you and harm you that many Christians, maybe you, have actually forgotten how to live. You've just forgotten how to live. You're so weighed down by like, get that door locked. Shove the chair. This is my house. Versus, Jesus is the door and he leads me into the house and out of the house. And he wants that door maybe to just be open. My dad used to say, we'd go to the church sometimes to do something and it would all be locked up. I'm working at a church right now. You got to have a fob to get in and, you know, it's like Fort Knox. My dad used to say, the church shouldn't have locks on the doors. Everybody should be welcome, both the physical, tangible church and people, the church. We shouldn't have locks. How are we opening our lives to people? And I'm not saying you got to open your life to every single person. Some people, you know, certain people for certain things, okay? Don't take the analogy too far. But are y'all locked up? I think the struggle is that we try to heal and protect and preserve with our own resources. And eventually your resources are going to run dry. And that's when you're going to lock the door. You're like, well, I got nothing left. verses, you have an abundant shepherd that is the door to your own healing, your own health, and your own life. To open the gates, say, there's an abundance for you in me. Like the door to your mind, your mental health. Are you the door to how you think about yourself and all the self-talk and chatter in your mind? Or is Jesus the door, abundantly reminding you that you are his son and you are his daughter, you are beautifully and wonderfully made, and you are his treasure? Or how about the door to your heart, your emotional health? Are you the door, trying to protect your feelings, not dealing with emotions of loss or sadness or depression, addiction, stress, whatever it is, but instead trying to just trying to hold it all together versus the abundant resources Jesus has both within himself and also the gifts and talents he's given others to counsel and to guide and to give medicine or whatever it is that you need. He's given an abundance both found in him and the abundant resources of his people with their gifts and talents so that you can be healed in that area or at least find healing in those areas. How about the door to your physical health, your body? Are you trying to preserve it? In other words, are you just kind of lazy with your physical health, not moving, not trying to find ways to improve aches and pains, or you're out of shape, or to find rest when you're physically tired? We're the door of our own busyness and gluttony and laziness because we can control it. Rather than make Jesus the door in his abundance, so that as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9, that he disciplines his body so that he can run the race till the end. Like all the way. I want to go all the way. How about the door to your soul, your spiritual life? If we were to describe to someone what that looks like, what would it consist of? Does it consist of anything consistently? Or is that also a door you're protecting with what you do and how you do it and what you believe and never branching out to experience the abundance of God of your faith? You ever realize like how much you actually don't know about God? He's an abundant God. Are we allowing our soul to be open to Jesus to try new spiritual disciplines or explore his word in a fresh way, to pray in ways we didn't know we could because we've begun to realize that the way I know and experience God is actually really small when it could be abundant? Or how about the door to your relationships? Is Jesus the door to those? Are they open to what he could do? Or as you leave the fold and walk out into the wild, wild west of our world, when was the last time you actually had a spiritual conversation who was not a believer already? Is the door to those moments not open to an abundant God that says, hey, I know you're my daughter or you're my son, but I might love for them to be too. Oh, I don't know what to say. I don't know enough. You're the door. Stop being the door. Let Jesus be the door. Let him open it up. I don't know what to say. Well, good news. That's because you're trying to preserve something versus live in the abundance of Jesus and allow him to give you words to say. You don't actually trust him to give you anything to say. Oh, I'll screw it up. I saw somebody the other day. They're like, oh, I shared Jesus with somebody the other day, and they're probably never going to come to Christ because of what I said and this and that and the next thing. And I said, yeah, well, they might not if you think that you're the reason they're going to come to Jesus. You ain't the reason. He's the door. Not you. He's the door. See, church, preservation takes on this model of living. Remember Lord of the Rings? I don't really like Lord of the Rings, but all I remember is Gollum. Is that the weird character? And he has the ring. And what's he always doing? Precious. Right? I feel like that's how we live our life. We hold on to the things and we're like, precious. These are my precious things. Right? There was a lot of power in that ring, though, wasn't there? A lot of power. And I don't know what for, because I don't know. But I knew there's power. Right? But imagine if you lived in the power and the abundance of Jesus Christ and stopped going, how much more could you, like, just live? I'm not saying how much more could you do, but just how much more would your life have life and abundance? Because there's nothing outside of what Jesus can do in your life. He's not actually giving you out of his supply. He's actually giving you out of his abundance, which means he's never going to run dry. So the five areas, your heart, your soul, your mind, your strength, your relationships. What do you need out of his abundance in those areas? What do you need to make Jesus the door of those to be swung open? So that you can actually find life and find it what? What is the word? Abundantly. What do you need to kind of work on? Maybe you need to go into the fold, right? Where there's rest and there's protection and there's like Jesus is sitting at the door and you kind of lean up next to him and be like, hey, I got a question. Can we talk about this for a minute? And he has so much wisdom and knowledge and expertise or whatever you need in that thing. He goes, yeah, let's talk about it. Let me share it with you. You rest at night. You ever notice when you rest, you're not doing anything, but something's keeping you alive? That's the Lord. That's his abundance. When you wake in the morning and you have to go out of the fold, what happens? We go back into like this preservation mode. Versus be the door. Let Jesus be the door. All right, Lord, I'd like to live an abundant life today. With my family at work, with my kids, with my spouse, whatever I do. When I eat my food, I'd like to experience the abundance of you. I feel like it's just like a better way to live, isn't it? It's a hard way to live. I know that for sure. But maybe like out of those five things, like where do you need Jesus to be the door? Your heart, your emotional life, your mind, your mental health, your soul, your spiritual life, your body, your physical life, and your relationships. Love the Lord your God with what? All your heart, soul, mind, strength, love others. Five things. Everything you do affects one of those areas. Where does Jesus need to be the door? So that you can go into the fold, figure out life and stuff and whatever you need to figure out in those areas, and then go out of the door, which is Jesus, and be like, okay, I can do this today because I have the abundance of Jesus. Sounds good to me, doesn't it? How do you do it? I have no idea. Here's my suggestion to you. Make Jesus the door. Stop trying to preserve your life. James tells us that your life is what? Vapor. Mist. Here today, gone tomorrow. Stop trying to preserve it. Let Jesus be the door to all the areas of your life. Don't try to close and open your own doors. Let him be the door. And I think you'll begin to find maybe a more abundant life. You may enjoy things a little more. You may find more peace, more satisfaction. You may enjoy your, you know, turkey dinner more because you're realizing that it's out of his abundance that you have it. And then in turn, you're going to enjoy Jesus Christ more and more. Amen? God, thanks for your word. We're grateful for it. I pray that whatever's going on in our heart and our mind and our soul and our body, relationships, I pray that you can encourage us to open that door, to allow your abundance to give whatever we are in need of so that we can have new life in you and to trust you with everything that we have, God. I pray that as we go into the fold through the door, whether that's salvation for the first time or to just sit and to be with you or to rest, I pray that we find that. And as we walk out through the door, which is you, I pray that you lead us in whatever areas we need to live into, to tap into your resources to help us walk through this life that you have given us so that we don't allow things to come in and destroy and kill and steal, but we allow our lives to live abundantly in you. In your name, amen.
We're going to close the song.